I believe that it is better to go and try it than having the regret not to start. So in a lot of decisions I make in business or in life are based on this very simple formula. If I don't do this, will I feel regret? And if the answer is yes, then I have to go and try it and do it.
Welcome to the B2B Breakthrough Podcast. We're here to bring you all the best knowledge, insights, and strategies from e-commerce experts, successful business owners, and the team at Alibaba.com that you'll need to grow your business and achieve your next big breakthrough. I'm your host, Sharon Guy. Welcome to this episode with Simona Moore, a seasoned brand development and e-commerce expert currently excelling as the CEO of PB Pro, a leading professional pickleball brand. With over a decade of experience, she's previously led marketing and brand development at Lowe's, significantly boosting profitability in several product categories. As president of SGIM, she also provides strategic consulting for high-profile clients in sports and entertainment. Her extensive background blends corporate expertise with entrepreneurial vigor, driving digital innovation and market expansion. Welcome to our show, Simona.
Thank you for having me.
So you actually started as a professional tennis player and you were ranking on all different types of scoreboards representing countries nationally. But then somewhere along the way, you decided to go into e-commerce and go into actually Lowe's, which is a company that I previously partnered with in a previous company. But that's more traditional retail and in areas of category management. Can you just share more about your beginnings and all of that transition and how that all came to be?
So I had a very untraditional journey when it comes to kind of how I end up in business. And as you mentioned, I was a professional tennis player. So I was born and raised in Slovakia, coming from a very athletic family. My father was a semi-professional soccer player and then took on a role to lead me. The goal was to get into professional tennis, which I played about 5 years. I tried to break through and kind of make my mark, and I did my best. Half of my tennis career happened in Slovakia. When we moved, I was about top five. And then in Czech Republic, that was my second half of my junior career was in Czech Republic. So I played in both countries. The biggest accomplishment I had in a junior career is to win some ITF tournaments in doubles. I won two or three. And then I won the indoor national championship in juniors 16 and under. And after that, when I was 17, I moved into the pro ranks. But to your point, the training was pretty extensive. I think the first 3 years between 7 and 10, it was kind of just fun and just getting into the game. But then after I was 10, the training became more focused and extensive with specific goals and things like that. And my dad was probably ahead of his time in terms of nutrition and training, very purposeful training from a very young age. So I kind of learned the discipline and saw results. So I trusted the process.
How did you transition to Lowe's and the corporate life?
So when I knew that the career was ending, I was thinking about like what I'd like to do in the future. It was obviously not a scary time because you're trying to transition to unknown. All I known was to be an athlete and the athletics. At first, I thought I was going to stay with professional sports on the side of a business manager or an agent or something like that. And that was the goal I had while I was in college. So I took all the business classes, but my goal is I'm going to become a sports agent. I'm going to come back to pro sports. And I've done some impressive internships that led to it. So I did internship at Rolex in advertising. Then I did internship at IMG Academies. And then my last internship was actually at IMG headquarters in Ohio, which is the international management group. Back then, that was the group to kind of work for. But there were some unfortunate circumstances that happened after I graduated from school. And really, the positions that I was interested in were not available in pro sports. And I thought, I'll just transition into regular business and then we'll see how my career unfolds. And I interviewed for an internship at Lowe's. And it was just a growing company. It was really booming, growing, building stores. So they were hiring. They hired me for the brand management group. And when I first started, it was a really funny story. My English wasn't that great yet. It was kind of my second language. And I had to learn the business language that was outside of the sports. And I remember my first project was to do analysis on rakes and shovels. I was supposed to go to see the competitors and do a full-on analysis of the branding and the pricing and things like that. And I remember I had to take a dictionary and kind of like look at what the rakes and shovels were. But I did really well. And I kind of found this new excitement about something totally new, not related to sports.
That is actually very true. The confidence that you can get from looking at a very niche product that has its own marketing.
I kind of stayed. And at first I thought, I'm just going to probably stay a few years and then kind of explore my options. But Lowe's back then had just incredible pool of talented people. I had just some incredible people around me on our team. My immediate boss was just an incredible person that taught me a lot about business, outside of business, and everything. And then we had also the extending team of our vice presidents in marketing and just the teams that I was exposed to. I worked with a direct sourcing team. So we had a sourcing team that worked with a lot of manufacturers overseas. I worked with trend and design team on the design side. And I was exposed to all these groups when we work on cross-functional projects, really. And that was fascinating to me. I wasn't the most talented maybe on the team, but I had these great people around me and I learned really quickly.
They didn't think to put you in the sports section?
I know. I mean, if I went probably to sports retail, it probably would have been maybe a little better fit. But at Lowe's, they did have a sports marketing division. And at that time, Lowe's was really focused on the NASCAR side. So the sports marketing was related to NASCAR. And I realized that I am interested in pro sports, but probably more into the racket sport, if you will. That's where I came from. So I enjoyed my role at Lowe's in the brand management group. We had some really fascinating projects where we were coming up with new brands for home decor or new brands for power tools and things like that. And it was really interesting to learn and see how we literally started from nothing and build this incredible multi-million dollar brand from brand identity to packaging to product design. And it was, to me, seeing the whole process was so fascinating and I absolutely enjoyed it. And having the great people around me, it just made it a lot easier for me to really stay.
Was that the time that you started to think maybe I can do my own brand too? Because I've seen the 0 to 1 for building something from scratch.
Yes. So the exposure to brand management made me feel like, wow, you know, one day I know the process now. I know what you need to do from A to Z. And I think I would be great at it. I absolutely believe that. So it was just the timing of things. I was not willing to kind of just like leave Lowe's and leave the environment yet. But it was back on my mind. Absolutely. It was something that was like, one day, I think this is where I'm going to end up. And fast forward, I left Lowe's. My daughter was born. So I did plan on leaving corporate just overall and rethink my life and career and making sure that I could raise her and have a family life. And I gave myself enough time to figure out what my next move would be. And I started slow. I started with the e-commerce marketing and merchandising for some NASCAR drivers. And it was a great fit. They just needed someone to help.
On the digital side.
Yeah, digital side. And there was actually some experience that I didn't have from Lowe's. I worked on a big budget, marketing, TV, magazines, and things like that. I haven't done digital at that point. So it was a really nice way for me to dive in and learn the e-commerce and digital social media and things like that. And it was on a smaller scale. It wasn't like a huge brand or a corporate. And I learned how to build websites. And again, I gained some new skills and learned how to navigate kind of the digital world. Obviously, it was changing so fast and it's still changing to this day. So it gave me just a really good base. And I knew, I was like, okay, now I have digital experience. I have the brand management experience. All I need is to come up with an idea or a product.
So then being a former tennis player, I would have thought you went into tennis rackets, but then it's actually pickleball.
So it is an interesting story as well. Life happens and you just have to see opportunities when they're right in front of you. And pandemic happened. Everybody was home. People were allowed to play some tennis, some golf. And in some places, pickleball was a sport that people in America played in a driveway.
My husband plays pickleball religiously every Saturday, and he recently started doing that after he's seen the mounds of people jumping in into this newborn hobby that now everyone has. Do you know the history of it? Like, how did it even become this huge thing?
So it was, I think during pandemic, more and more people like realized, okay, what are we going to do? So they bought our nets and they would play in a driveway. And initially a lot of people thought, oh, it's just a fad. Everybody will go back to their lives after the pandemic was over. And I did some background research on the industry. And back then, even before pandemic, they already had like a professional tour and they had few national tournaments and things like that. And after I tried to play it, I was like, okay, I get it. It's very addictive. As a tennis player, when you transition, you're good at a certain level, like right away. So it's fun. And then I realized, okay, to get like really, really good, you do need to spend more time on it. But to play at a 4-0 level, you can just go out there without any training and spending like time on like tennis your whole life. You're working on technique. And pickleball, you don't have to. And you can play with people who are older, younger. It's kind of an equalizer in terms of level, because the court is smaller and it really doesn't matter that you have a nice technique and someone doesn't, the ball kind of comes back very similar way. So I would say at the hobby level, pretty much anybody can play. So I understood that it is very addictive. It's very addictive. It's easy to get in. Everybody can play, even family or kids with grandparents. People will embrace it. And it doesn't require too much equipment, or there's very little entry in terms of cost.
You know how in corporate offices, there's always a ping pong table as part of the playroom or the chill room? I guess, do you think pickleball is at the same level of popularity as ping pong? Or is that sort of the pathway in the future?
I don't know much about the ping pong industry. We have a ping pong table as well. And I think that's more of how ping pong at the hobby level probably is. Every family will have a ping pong table. When they have people over, they will take the ping pong table out and play. I think pickleball has evolved a little further. And I don't know, a lot of research showed that about 9 million people played. Today, it's probably double. We didn't see the 2024 numbers yet. And it is consistent. So people buy the racket, they love it, and they start getting better. They want to be with a group of people, and they start playing more consistently in the evening with family and things like that. So I think it's evolved beyond just like, oh, let's just play once in a while. It's more like, oh, let's play. I want to get better. And even at the hobby level, there are lots of tournaments, very easy to enter. You can play for one day and be done. And I think that's also people who are hobby players, they still are, wow, you know, I could enter a tournament and win a medal.
Especially people from the corporate world, they never had the chance to pursue a certain athletic sport. Do you think it'll ever be so professional that it's going into the Olympics?
I believe that pickleball will evolve to that. As a matter of fact, I think pretty close. I don't think it will be at the LA Olympics in 2028, even though I know that everybody was trying to really get there. But beyond 2028, there's a possibility. There's some requirements where the sport has to be played in, I think, 75 countries or more. And there are some regulations around what that means and things like that. But I think pickleball will be an Olympic sport, even if it's just a show sport, but it will make its way to the Olympics, absolutely.
Oh, that's right, because it has to be an international phenomenon. Like, we know that it's very popular in the U.S., but yeah, I don't know how popular it is in other countries.
I think it just is a matter of time. U.S. has, I think they're really managing it well, in my mind, how they go about it. Certain leagues, like the PPA Tour, which is the highest pickleball tour for professionals, they're starting the same, or the U.S. is helping to launch the same tour in Australia, in other countries and things like that. So eventually it will most likely become kind of a global tour, if you will. But it just takes time where other countries kind of need to catch up. But because of the appeal, the competitiveness and the accessibility, I think that it's kind of a universal appeal. I'd say in U.S. it took off really quick and really fast. But I think there are other countries where the appeal will be there for certain groups or audiences. So I have no doubt that it will grow globally. U.S. might be always kind of the strong country with the best players initially, but I can see how Australia, England, and some other countries will definitely catch up.
So during the pandemic, you saw this phenomenon and you just went with it. How did you decide which piece to focus on? Because you, from PB Pro, it looks like the core product is the paddle, and then you built things around that. Like, how did you approach what part of the whole thing you wanted to do as your first product?
So creativity is really something that comes to me very naturally. When it comes to ideas, I am the person for ideas, and I come up with a plan how to execute very quickly. But initially, the thought was like, wow, this sport is going to stay here. That was the first thought after my research. And then I thought, when I first played with the pals that were available, I wasn't thrilled. Me coming from tennis, in tennis, very good feel for the ball, and I can judge the feel of anything that I hit with. So to be honest, like the paddles back then felt very stiff. And I thought there must be better materials or something where I can actually feel the ball a lot better so I can control it better. So I was like, okay, well, let me look at the paddles. I looked at the paddles, look at the materials. They were obviously very, very stiff fiberglass and things like that. So we looked at some different combinations and we landed on carbon fiber and polypropylene core. And then we just experimented with the shapes. And then we focus on classic shapes coming from tennis. I know I played tennis for the last 30 years. The classic shapes always did best. So there's some companies that experimenting with wider rackets and thicker, and it never really caught on. The classic shapes, the traditional, there's some improvements to the materials. They're lighter, they're more flexible, things like that. But in terms of the shape, there's a certain shape and that's it. And the same goes for pickleball paddles. And we were probably one of the first ones where we said there are going to be three or four shapes. There's going to be the wide body, there's going to be classic, there's going to be longer handle, and that's it. But we really cared about what the combination of the materials were. And that took us a long to figure out the best feel. We really focus on the feel, and that's our tagline, feel the difference. And we've arrived at. So we launched a company 3 years ago. We did launch paddles along with men's apparel, women's apparel. We're probably the only brand in the world having a PB Pro icon and a brand for male, and PB Pro icon and a brand for female. So the PB Pro portion stays the same, but the icon, one is male, one is female. We only use it on apparel. Paddles just have a PB Pro without any icon, but we felt like women should have their little own identity and have a cute little icon that goes with the PB Pro logo. It looks really, really chic. And for guys, we have an athletic silhouette of an athletic person. So we're very proud of that because it's something unique, something different. And we've seen consumers like really appreciated that we looked at the genders and developed.
How did you find the process, or did you use Alibaba.com to find your supplier? Did you build a whole new product, or were you just more so deeply researched into the available products that's on the market and then selecting the one that's the fiber?
So this is a combination of both. I have had sourcing experience long before PB Pro. So I've been sourcing products mainly on the apparel side, hats and the smaller promotional items before. So I knew how to go about looking for suppliers. In the same sense, I was just basically searching for suppliers who had experience with pickleball paddles, and I asked for their expertise in terms of materials and thickness and roughness and things like that. So I got feedback from them, and then I knew what already was on the market. And I talked to them about it. We're looking for something softer that gives the paddles or the player a little better feel. And we landed on the carbon fiber. So we were not the first one to really market it, but we knew that the carbon fiber is going to be the main surface. And it evolved to that as well. Even to this day, there's a new version of, it's called raw carbon fiber. It's even a better material for the high-end paddles. So it was a combination of looking for suppliers, getting feedback from suppliers. We used the platform Alibaba and had a really great experience for the last how many years we've been working with them.
I want to take a minute to talk about Alibaba Guaranteed. Sourcing can be long and complicated, but we're making it as easy as everyday online shopping with Alibaba Guaranteed, a selection of stock and customizable products with on-time delivery and money back for order issues, all guaranteed by Alibaba.com. With Alibaba Guaranteed, you can source with added confidence. You'll find products at competitive wholesale prices, and you can enjoy peace of mind knowing your delivery will arrive on time by the guaranteed dates. Should any issues arise with your orders or product quality, you're covered with a comprehensive money-back guarantee. Search for Alibaba Guaranteed to start sourcing more simply and achieve your next big breakthrough.
My husband started out with pretty cheap paddles from Amazon, and then now he's upgraded to the carbon fiber. So I guess everyone eventually migrates to something sturdier.
I was just going to say that the way the pickleball paddles have evolved, I would say in the feel, durability, and just kind of like the overall construction and quality has gotten a lot better. And now we're all waiting. What's the next big thing?
Oh, you think it'll change again? Like another new material will come up and then people will change out their carbon fiber for that one.
So there's a possibility. However, there are some strict standards around what the materials could be or what the results of how fast the ball can bounce from a paddle. Things like that are measured. So is the roughness and things like that. So there are some parameters that we have to stay within. And the industry standards are what they are. We have to get the paddles tested so they don't become dangerously fast. So there's some limits to what we as manufacturers can do. We have to stay within kind of the safe limits. But I think there's a lot of push for innovation. There's an opportunity for innovation. But I think the playability of the current paddles are very, very good. I think there are some other areas of the paddles that can improve. And maybe those are the areas where we as manufacturers have opportunity to bring something new and better. I think a lot of manufacturers are working on the quiet paddle.
Where there's no sound. I thought people would like that sound.
But there's some areas, you know, if you have a neighborhood and there are 100 courts, like people are playing pickleball, I can see how it can get old. But there's a company that has a quiet paddle out there. I think noise reduction paddle would be better, keeping the same material, same grade surface and things like that. They're already so good. But being able to dampen the sound probably would be a great innovation. And I'm sure we are all working on something like that.
How did you launch the brand in the initial phase?
During the pandemic, I did some sourcing projects that helped me generate some cash flow. And I used that cash flow to start my own business because I had a lot of experience to do a lot of things myself, like outsourcing production, obviously, but sourcing design, I outsourced design, but designing a website, social media, things like that. I was able to do all of that because I had this experience from Lowe's. I had this experience from working in e-commerce. So a lot of tasks that normally I would have to outsource, I was able to do by myself. And then even packaging. So the package design concept and things like that, I already had in my mind. I knew what they should look like. And then I have a designer that would execute and do them. So that part wasn't really that big of a deal. And buying the inventory, same thing. Like I used some of the funds that I generated from other sourcing projects and it worked nicely. And we launched in the fall of October 2020. And we launched online and kind of decided we're just kind of like going to build the momentum. The sport was very popular. So a lot of the clubs were calling us. We got a lot of inquiries. We were able to get into some online stores and things like that. So we had a nice momentum.
How were you able to do that? Just from the articles and just via SEO or through Google Ads to be discovered?
We did articles, we did SEO, direct-to-consumer was mainly generated through SEO and things like that. And then we started with selling to clubs. So because the pickleball was growing, we knew that every tennis club is going to eventually convert some courts, line their courts, because there was such a demand for people to play. So anytime we call a club, it wasn't really a big deal. They're like, yes, we're getting into pickleball, we need paddles. So our really strategy was focused more on bulk, selling to a club or selling wholesale. And we did that for about 8 or 9 months. And our big breakthrough was when we made some initial connection with Dick's Sporting Goods, with merchandising team. And the big thing was when they were getting into a pickleball category, and we were probably one of the first brands they picked up and they bought all of our inventory. And that was a big breakthrough for us as a small brand and things like that. In a new sport, that kind of launched our success. And since then, we were able to gain more accounts with other retailers and things like that.
So now you're still majority wholesale versus direct, or have the scales tipped?
Yes, majority is still wholesale. And now, because we are established now with a national retailer and working on some other channels, we're now able to really invest and focus on the direct-to-consumer and build that channel much better because we have the cash flow and things like that.
What are your strategies in growing direct?
Mainly SEO. So working on a content, developing really, really good content that brings people to our site has proved itself being very successful, maybe even better than advertising. And since the landscape online is changing heavily, people are searching for good information and good content, and that has proved itself as the best strategy right now.
Can you give some examples of what you've done?
So we stay on top of the trending topics. So, for example, not many people know whether the sport is Olympic sport. Olympics are coming up. So we would write an article about the Olympics. We state the obvious that pickleball will not be in the Paris Olympics. And here are the reasons. But this is what pickleball has to achieve in order to get there. So we do heavy information about a topic like that. And then, of course, at the end, we put our own thoughts and suggestions and things like that, that we as a company, where we stand on a topic like that. So we provide our own point of view. And another example would be there are a lot of tennis players getting into pickleball. There is a little rift between tennis and pickleball, which sport is harder and things like that. At the end of the day, I think in my mind, the two sports can coexist. I would say the very similarity between tennis and pickleball is probably skiing and snowboarding. Skiing was the core sport where everybody was a skier. And then when snowboard came in, I'm sure the skiers didn't really feel that great about it. But a lot of kids, younger audience, they embrace and love snowboarding. And these days, we all accept it. We all ski and snowboard on the same mountain, and these two sports can absolutely coexist wonderfully. And I almost look at tennis and pickleball maybe in that respect. Initially, when snowboard started, it was kind of like hop on the board and let's go and let's have some fun. And pickleball is kind of like that. Don't worry about your style. Just get in there. Let's hit some balls. And those two sports evolved and coexist nicely. And I kind of feel like tennis and pickleball are a little bit in that space as well.
And I guess both of them helped each other grow, because when you drive a very long time and you go to the snowy mountain, like, it's nice to have more choices. That if you don't really like the skiing, if it's too hard, that you can try the other one as a beginner too. And it's similar for the racket side. What has been the hardest part about doing this business? Seems like it's going very well.
The most rewarding part is the creative, at least for me, for my personal fulfillment, if you will. The creative part is maybe what drives all of it. So for me, being able to come up with a palette that really feels great, and I get feedback from customers, this is really great. This is so much better than the previous version. And they give me some tips. And I take that information, I'm able to come up with a product that's actually sellable. It's very rewarding. So that part, coming up with a new product line, colors and things like that, it's a joy. So I very much enjoy the creative process. And that drove building company around it. Because I have so many skills, I was able to do a lot of things myself. Me also coming from big box retail, I understand what the big box customer is looking for in terms of delivering the presentation, or what are they going to look like? You know, they look at the line, your product kind of has to fit in from price point, has to fit in from color scheme, has to fit in from wherever the customer is shopping the retail. And me coming from Lowe's, I understand all those questions. So when I'm presenting my product, I'm not just presenting, hey, this is a line of product we develop. This is a line of product that would fit in to your retailer. And then when I'm talking to a retailer that has a different customer base, I'm able to deliver a product that will fit into their portfolio or the category. So that has been really helpful. I enjoy working with big box retail.
Yeah. And it's also one of those relationships that becomes a key account. Like, once you get in, secure it quarter after quarter, it's pretty even keeled in terms of order.
Yeah. For the most part, we obviously have to keep up with the innovation. There are a lot of new players and competition coming into the category. So it becomes challenging because the space becomes crowded. But we've been able to stand on our own two feet and hold our own.
I imagine that the CEOs of the other brands might not have been a professional tennis player in the past and understood paddles. So you kind of have a natural upper hand in that.
I think that. And so we're probably the only, or there may be a few manufacturers, women-owned. We're women-owned. It's kind of very unusual in this space. I think there are a lot of women that actually are impeccable and very successful. But in the hard goods, like technical pickleball paddles, it's a little bit less. And we are 100% women-owned. We just got the certification, WBE. We're very proud of it. So we hope that we'll be able to leverage it and also kind of become real good partners for new retailers where they can leverage us and kind of also show that they do work on diversity and they embrace diversity.
What are some of your next goals with the company?
So in terms of the business, we would like to continue innovating, like come up with a really, really good innovative product would be absolutely amazing. We're working on a few things. And we would like to really develop the direct-to-consumer channel. That's our goal. I think we have really good handle on the big box retailers. The direct-to-consumer is very, very attractive, and we're working on that very hard. And maybe bringing in the future, bringing in a partner that could help us to get into the pro shop channels. So there are companies that have huge distribution in the racket sports, in the tennis pro shops, in the clubs, golf pro shops. Because a lot of the rackets or tennis clubs are converting even the name to racket sports club, because now you have tennis, pickleball, paddle, there's paddle tennis and things like that. So a lot of the centers are going to be called racket sports. So we would probably want to partner up with someone who already understands that channel really, really well and could bring our product into that channel successfully.
You bring up a good point, which is it's almost like the Air Jordans were in the running shoes world, right? If Michael Jordan wore your brand or wore that model, then that model of shoe just takes off. So then is your goal to find more athletes to use your racket? And if so, where would athletes be shopping for gear?
Actually, this is where tennis and pickleball are probably look different. So if you want the top of the line tennis racket, you go to a tennis specific pro shop, and that's where you get advice and that's where you buy your top product. But pickleball is a little different. So you would actually find top of the line pickleball paddles from us or other competitors. You would find it at these retailers. So it is a little different. You will find lower priced items as well, but you will also be able to buy the top of the line. Plus, online business makes everything easier. So everybody is everywhere and distribution is king. So everybody's looking for the most distribution they can get. And they're not so specific about which retail channel. Yes. So I think the lines have blurred a little bit for pickleball, and probably it's working for the industry. I don't think it hurt any brands, even the high-end brands. I don't think it was an issue. So there is a very successful professional tour called PPA. PPA is where there's a significant growth of professional pickleball players. They're being paid. They play Major League Pickleball, which is a pro team competition. And it has been really, really successful in terms of how it's growing and tracking. And it attracts more and more talent. So they're growing in terms of number of tournaments, the purse is growing, sponsorship, everything is growing. So it attracts a lot of new players. A lot of them are coming from the tennis world, where they're former, let's say, Division I tennis players. They go into pickleball and they go straight to the pros. So we already know that there are some marquee players that are crucial to sell paddles. You know, there's number one player, male and female, they're just absolutely amazing. And they do sell paddles because people are not educated about what to buy. So if they buy something that the number one player, or male or female, play with, they know they buy something good. So there's definitely the sponsorships work. I think we feel like we really want to find someone who is a really great fit and can take us from point A to point B. And we also feel like the timing of everything is important. So while we're working on our distribution channels and growing and partnering up with the right distribution partners, I think the player, whoever we will end up working, has to kind of fit in into the whole strategy. And I think we're kind of just waiting for the right opportunity. And we know that it will come as we're growing and becoming more prevalent in the marketplace.
If there's a first-time entrepreneur looking to get into this space, do you have a few words of advice for them and what to look out for?
Anyone who is starting out, there's really no magic formula. If you have a great idea and you have the creativity and drive and you believe in yourself and believe in your product, don't be afraid to go and start it. I believe that it is better to go and try it than having the regret not to start. So in a lot of decisions I make in business or in life are based on this very simple formula. If I don't do this, will I feel regret? And if the answer is yes, then I have to go and try it and do it. And then my other advice would be to find someone who believes in you and your product and can give you a very objective feedback or can guide you in a sense. At the end of the day, you're making your own decisions. But it is really good to have a third party that's not really involved in your inner circle, but can just give you objective opinion about, well, you know, this sounds really great. How about, have you thought about this?
Like a business coach?
I wouldn't call it a coach. I have someone, he's retired now. He worked at Lowe's. He was my first boss and he really cared about my business career. So he advised me when I was young, this is what you should look out for. If you stay at Lowe's, these are the things that you should probably look at and make sure you do this, don't do this. And I always went for an advice for him. At the end of the day, I made my own decisions, but it was really hard to kind of like listen to someone who had good intentions with your career and really wanted the best for you. And even though he's not retired, and once in a while I call him and I situation I have and I ask, you know, how would you handle this or how should I look at it? And he has very good perspective. And this has helped me to grow as a business owner. And it also helped me to not to be afraid to ask questions or ask for help. And there may be some people from different industries that may not really understand exactly your niche, but they understand the principles and may just give you a really good advice. So that has really worked for me. I like to make my own decision or research, but once in a while, I really like to like talk to a couple of people and just get their perspective because I'm running the business by myself. I don't really have a lot of employees and, you know, I don't have huge teams and things like that that I had at the corporate world. I do feel like I have extended pool of people that I can talk to that usually give me like a really good perspective.
Are you part of any communities, whether it's online or local?
We're not part of a community yet. I am excited about the women-owned business certification. I think women-own has some communities and things like that. So I would like to get involved in some level, again, just to get like perspective from different women in their respective industries. They may have some suggestions and things like that. So learning and navigating through the business world helps you to be successful.
We know a lot of women entrepreneurs because a lot of them have used because Alibaba is a platform and a lot of them come to find the first product or source or compare suppliers and whatnot. So far, I haven't interviewed anyone in the sports category, but I think the meeting of two different industries sometimes and that meeting point is sometimes when you spark a new, more innovative idea than just talking to somebody within the same industry that you're in.
Yeah, sometimes it's better if the person is not in your industry and they're going to have a different perspective and they're not in your competition. You're not competitors. So that helps too. But it has been a great ride. I enjoy learning and developing. It's very fulfilling. And this business has given me a really great area to evolve as a person, business person, also in my family. I'm a much better delegator right now. No, just joking aside, but it's been a really great ride. I can imagine a life without having something that I'm excited about every day when I wake up. And maybe the competitive edge that I still have as a former professional athlete kind of lives in me. And the business just gives me an avenue to use it and be in a competitive marketplace and the business spectrum.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us and sharing all of your insights. B2B Breakthrough is produced by Alibaba.com. To find out how Alibaba.com is empowering its customers with the tools, services, and resources they need to grow their businesses, visit Alibaba.com. And then make sure to search for B2B Breakthrough Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. Make sure to follow us so you don't miss future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Alibaba.com, thanks for listening.